Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's Wednesday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. And, you know, each day we start off this program with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. Not exactly sure what the "and beyond" part is, but it's in the script. joining us today is a communications consultant, Teresa Bourgeois, who's famous for really doing a lot of preparation for all the show based on the topics we send, and we appreciate that.
I'm all about the prep. I'm a wonk.
Well, just to throw a curve, I've changed all the topics.
As long as it's about the Red Sox, I'm prepared.
You just go with the flow. Also, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I never prepare, Ray. I just go with the flow.
You were born ready.
And you do a great job. Speaking of preparing, Alan Shartok is here. He is our
resident non-preparer.
No, you're good. And it's nice to have you back from New Orleans. How was New Orleans? Good?
Oh, it's good. We had fun down there. We ate a lot.
It's nice to have you back because it's somebody to yell at in the newsroom. It's nice to have you here.
You know what they have over there? They have barbecued oysters. They take the whole oyster and then they barbecue them. And they are delicious.
So you can eat healthy in New Orleans?
You can eat healthy.
That sounds very healthy.
what are they, beignets?
Salad.
Do you have beignets?
I'm not done yet.
What about the grandchildren?
What about them?
Were they there in New Orleans?
No, well, we have Jonas and his wife have a wonderful daughter, Mila.
Yeah.
And we spend a lot of time with her. Yeah.
Very exciting.
Nice. That's nice.
Did you ask me how I was?
No, that was it. I didn't really want the whole thing. I just wanted the Cliff Notes version.
I am not too well.
Okay. Not surprised. Hey, you know what is going well?
And the reason I'm not too well is because I'm worried about the fund drive.
The lockbox.
The rest of you guys, you sit there and you say, just give me my paycheck. But me, I know that I'm going to be held responsible for whether or not we make this or not.
Well, I have great news. The lockbox is at $269,873. That is fantastic news.
That is a lousy piece of news because it means there's $230,000 left to go. How are we going to do that?
And we have about a week and a half now.
Halfway home, we'll be there by morning.
A couple of days.
Now, there is a...
There's the wish factor.
And then there's this that came in, and I didn't hear about this until yesterday. I guess this is new.
Oh, yeah. No, the Bernard and Ann Spitzer Trust has pledged, this is unbelievable, but there's a catch, $25,000 if we can raise that $500,000 by 6 a.m. on June 5th. That means that we have $230,000 to go to get that extra $25,000. Otherwise, we lose it.
Now, you often say you're a glass half full kind of guy.
I am.
So the glass is half full at this point.
No. Here's what happens. We're not doing that well. But what happens is it always gets faster and faster and faster and faster.
Right.
And it gets faster and faster and faster. Now it's getting faster and faster,
right.
And you have the whoosh factor. But then the question is, do you make it or not? Is there enough whoosh to make it? So I'm down to 127 pounds. I'm worrying so much.
You're down to 127 pounds?
Yeah.
Even after a trip to New Orleans where all you do is eat?
No. I enjoyed New Orleans because I was able to sit there at the table and eat a lettuce leaf while everybody else was engorging.
You were eating
on barbecue oysters.
All right. So the email address, if you want to complain about us wasting time, is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Please try to keep your letters brief. Really, paragraphs, not so good. Couple sentences, great. Don't include links because, obviously, we can't click them on the air. We can't share them
as we read them.
Don't use abbreviations. Alan will read whatever you write, so be very careful. Quickly proof your emails, make sure that they look good, and then click send. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And while you're at the website, make a pledge to the lockbox and get us to that magic goal before the on-air drive begins June 5th.
No, in all honesty, this is scary because it's so important. I mean, just this morning, Chuck Schumer was in the paper. We're going to talk about that later?
Yeah, we are.
He was in the paper mentioning in the Albany Times Union this morning WAMC and saying how much money this radio station is going to lose. But, of course, we all knew that already.
Yep.
Maybe the pledge in support of wonkiness. What do you think?
Wonky.
Right. Some people need to pledge in support of wonky.
So the latest from Britain, as investigators hunted for accomplices of a suicide bomber and Britain's prime minister warned another attack could be imminent. Thousands of people poured into the streets of Manchester in a defiant vigil Tuesday for victims of the blast that killed 22 people and wounded 59. Authorities identified the bomber as 22-year-old Salman Abidi and arrested another suspect, the terror threat level was raised to critical yesterday, meaning armed soldiers could be deployed at public events. Police are trying to establish if Abidi acted alone in the suicide bombing. They have ascertained that he traveled to Libya. So there's that factor. Manchester police made another arrest early today at a house just a 10-minute walk from the home of Abidi. They had arrested three earlier in connection with the bombing. So threat level raised to critical.
So when you get guys who are walking around with machine guns, which the Brits don't do, you know, it's not a gun society. You know, there's a sense of some relief that somebody's watching out. But if a guy's walking down the street and is determined to kill himself and has a bomb in his backpack, even the guys with the machine guns aren't going to stop him, right?
No, that's right. But to that point, though, the effectiveness of his act of terrorism is enhanced when he gets help in building a bomb that is more, more effective at killing people and disrupting things. And that's the thing that they're looking at is they don't think this 22-year-old on his own could have built this bomb. And the question now is, you know, did he get some help over the internet? Did he get help or guidance when he went to Libya and visited Libya in the past? Or is there somebody there in Manchester who's outfitted him and set him up for this? And then the question is, you know, who was that, and have they set up other people? And that's probably the primary reason for the terror alert being so high, and it makes a lot of sense. It's frightening.
Yeah, and they think that this whole thing may have a dramatic effect on the British elections, which are coming up immediately, and that Theresa May have been seen as somebody who blew it because this guy was known to the authorities. And they didn't do anything about it. And we've seen that here, too, where people have been contacted by the FBI and interviewed, but still they do it. Mm-hmm. And how are you gonna do that right? I don't know.
These are such a challenge. I mean, each of these cases, it's a needle in a haystack, right? In retrospect, it all seems so clear, and why didn't they get them? But this is why it concerns me. I know we're going to talk about the budget eventually, but you think about what's going on here in the United States with the intelligence community. You know, really needs to be focused on this, yet there's so much focus on the Russia situation as it needs to be. But you also think about some of the budget cuts that they're proposing in the U.S. for the deep cuts in the State Department. And deep cuts in programs like Food for Peace and all those. And it's all interrelated because the way you find the needle in the haystack, I think, is that you have very good intelligence, you have cooperative intelligence, and you are connected as much as possible to the people on the ground and the communities on the ground. But these are very, very difficult problems to solve and situations to stop. They always look very clear in retrospect, but they're not.
You know, Theresa, as we speak this morning, I saw something fleetingly. Maybe you guys saw it better because you read better than I do. But there was a story about one of our head spies, the head of that department, was saying, we're going to take a much more aggressive stance on doing wiretapping and other things that others didn't do, that the Obama administration didn't do. And so there you go, in which our very basic civil liberties start to get threatened. And here's the problem. If you said to the American people, hold up your hand if you think it's important to do things that might be potentially illegal in order to protect, quote, protect your safety, how many people would hold up their hands? And I'll bet three quarters of this country would be holding up their hands.
Well, you're probably correct. And all it does is indicate that when people are afraid, they're more willing to give up their civil rights. And when they're more secure, they respect those rights. I mean, right after 9/11 with the Patriot Act, everybody was on board on that.
Sure.
Everybody was frightened, and we were afraid of an imminent additional terror attack. But many years later, we look back at it, and we've given up all kinds of civil rights and all kinds of government, all kinds of access. The NSA was in listening to phone calls or at least monitoring all the phone calls and gaining all kinds of personal information. And when we're more you know, when we have a little bit of perspective on it, we see the danger of that.
Mike Spain is here from the Times Union, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable on WAMC. Mike Spain is actually doing air trumpet here.
Clarinet.
Oh, was that a clarinet?
I think it was a
trumpet. Is three fingers up here. I know because I'm a trumpet player.
Oh, okay, I was using clarinet, more fingers.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, whatever. It's
even though a trumpet was playing, I was. You
know. He was backing up the clarinet with the trumpet.
Fine. All right, I've had enough. 24 minutes after 9 o'clock at Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, having a great old time here with Mike Spain and Teresa Bourgeois and Alan Shartok, and you, of course, at panel@wamc.org. And I understand, Alan, that we may have a letter or two.
Yes, we do have a letter or two. Karen writes, interesting that on NPR this morning that it was reported that Trump, quote, held a meeting at the Vatican. Can the Pope or anyone, quote, hold meeting at the White House?
Oh, you make a point. We're coming to the Pope in a moment.
Yeah, we'll get to him. Yeah,
stand right. Stand by for Pope.
Audience with the Pope.
Mike says, hi, panel, putting money in the lockbox right now.
Hey, way to go.
Flynn is refusing to talk about Russia-Trump ties. Here's my nightmare scenario. Couldn't he and other parties being investigated keep doing this? And if they get convicted, our president could simply grant a presidential pardon? That's true.
Yeah, and we're getting to that as well.
Not only that, there's big discussion, as I heard on somewhere this morning, the radio maybe, that it is conceivably possible for a president to pardon himself. Think about that.
And
that
Nixon, get hairy when that happens?
And that's funny, right? And that Nixon was considering pardoning himself.
And then he had a visit from senior
Ford
Republicans.
Did it, and Ford lost the election because he did it.
But he did the right thing.
Well, Ford was one of those last politicians, particularly of that party, who did the right thing.
He did it for the country, not for Nixon, I think.
What'd you say?
He did it for the country, not for Nixon. Yeah.
And it may have cost him his election to the presidency to a full term in 1976.
I think Flynn does, I know we're getting to this, but, you know, if you want to believe in democracy, that's his right to do what he's doing. And he has a right to do what he's doing.
He has the right to do what he's doing, Fifth Amendment.
Yeah,
that's why they wrote the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
Then the big question, we're going to talk about this later.
Oh, heck yeah, but I don't care. I've lost control of the show. Whatever happens,
you
happens.
Do every time.
Mike
doesn't look happy this morning. I don't get it. Mike doesn't look happy. You know when you put a smiley face, you get all those choices of faces to put up there.
Yeah.
You get a
emojis.
Smiley face, and then you get an unhappy
Teresa and I were just commiserating that, but she came down 787, and I came from the west on I-90, and we both encountered major traffic tie-ups. There was an accident on that bridge at Everett Road that was tying things up. And where did you hit your
stress? I got off of 787 so that I wouldn't be late, and then Route 32 was all backed up because 787 was stopped.
So we're telling you the minutiae of our life, and it does define your moods.
That's true. I'm sorry about that if I put you on the spot, but you have an anti-smiley face.
He's also sad about what's going on in Manchester.
Okay. And if they get convicted, our president could simply grant presidential pardons. That's right. That's correct. All right. Michael says, are the oysters barbecued in their shells? They are.
Oh, delicious.
They are. And then the question is, because we had them in several places, the question is, what do they add in terms of, you know, spices and things on the top of the oysters?
We'll get Rick Orlando. He will know. And he listens to the show. He'll tell you how to do that.
He sits there with Dawn all day long,
I took a cooking class from him thanks to WAMC Pledge. Wow, is that great.
Rick is great.
Oh, that was great.
Well, we are really all over the place.
I'm back with the whole bombing thing.
Right.
So.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Now, that was four topics ago, unfortunately, but we can thank the letters for that.
I still want to hear the president announce that he's pardoning himself and how that would sound in Trump words. Can you imagine that?
It's a phony.
I'm pardoning me.
Because it's a phony.
Bigly.
Because it's phony. It's a phony rigged, you know, thing. And
it's not fair.
And so I'll have to pardon myself since nobody else will do it for me.
Ray, can you take control of all this?
No. I left about 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
I think with that budget, he's going to need a pardon.
Alan, whoosh factor. Can you just say thank you for all the money that's already come in? Thank you. And that's from Karen.
Well, the whoosh factor, I believe, is actually a positive thing.
It is.
That means
because
right.
it means
things
that things
speed up
towards the end,
right.
when people realize what's at stake here, that the whole radio station is at stake. Chuck Schumer himself said so this morning in the paper.
But maybe we don't say thank you enough, and thank you to all those who kicked in so far. But we have a long way to go.
Is that a shot?
Not at all, sir.
All right.
No, it's we are a team.
We are a team.
We are a team.
Okay.
You are
on
a
behalf
team.
Of Alan, thank you, everyone who's
yeah. Henry says, do you know what the proposed budget allots for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? If funding is to be eliminated, WAMC might consider discontinuing the president's Saturday morning address and instead use that time slot for fundraising. That's Henry in Palinville, where everybody's vice president.
I would be surprised if WAMC would depart from its public obligation to report what the president has to say.
You are so right, Michael.
Yes.
It's important that we hear what he says.
You are so right. This is not a place for kidding around. Okay, now let's go to Judith, who says, of course, I am not making the Manchester suicide bomber, the British-born Salmad Abidi, you are
yes,
so
sir.
Right.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You there. I didn't know you spoke it. Right for his horrendous act at the Ariana Grande pop concert. But let's think about it for a moment. Abidi just returned from Syria, a country that has been decimated, where close to 500,000 children have been orphaned, where 6 million people have been forced to flee, where thousands of refugees have been and are being drowned. What does his act and motivation reflect back to us about the world we are all part of?
Now, I had heard he had been in Libya.
Libya, right.
So,
but I take her point. Libya.
All right, we will have to leave it. Oh, you want quickly. You only have about 10
127
seconds.
127 pounds? We have a large provolone at Mercurio's Deli in Queens that weighed that much.
Shartok, our large provolone. All right, way to go. All right, we have to take a break here. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Try to keep them brief if you could. We will take a break, hear the latest from Britain, and then we'll be back with more Roundtable. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:34 on a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel today. Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok are on the panel. You can join in with quick, concise notes at panel@wamc.org. The Vatican says after a visit by President Trump that it's hoping for a serene collaboration with the United States to help immigrants and provide health care and education in the U.S., The president met for about 30 minutes Wednesday morning with Pope Francis and afterward with the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin. In a statement, the Vatican said the two sides agreed on their joint commitment in favor of life and freedom of worship and conscience. The statement continued, "It is hoped that there may be serene collaboration between the state and the Catholic Church in the United States, again engaged in service to the people in the fields of health care, education, and assistance to immigrants." The president said he had a, quote, fantastic meeting with Pope Francis. He added that the Pope is something. The president's on his way to Brussels later today for meetings with, I believe, NATO and some bigwigs there. All right. I know we had some panelists who wanted to say something about the meeting today.
Well, you know, I mean, here's Pope Francis, who is a man I much admire. I really do. We have our disagreements, too, but I really admire him. And I think, it's clear that he and Trump have had major disagreements on the environment, on the wall, and all of the rest of that stuff. So it doesn't matter what that half an hour looked like, because in many ways, it's all been announced. There isn't a single time that I've watched anything on CNN or MSNBC where they haven't cataloged all of the major disagreements these two guys have. So he goes into a room and everybody's nice. You know, Trump is a guy who could say one thing one day and something else the next day and could probably please the Pope at a given moment. But that doesn't really mean anything because we know what the issues on the table are. Right, Mikey?
Oh, Mikey. Yeah. These are scripted events. It was cordial, photo opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they've both said things that were very contrary about such issues, as you've said. You know, the wall, especially when the Pope visited Mexico and came close to the American border, suggesting that people who build walls are and not build bridges, or are not acting as Christians. And the presidential candidate at the time, Trump, was angry at that and said, well, you know, if the Vatican gets attacked by ISIS, you know, they're going to wish that I was elected president, and silly things like that. Now, that rhetoric wasn't present today. I'm sure it was extremely cordial. And both, at least, regardless of the different way that you would get there, want world peace. And they have different views on economic reform, but they do want people to succeed. So it was just a symbolic, and it continues relationships that the presidents have had with the popes over the years. And it's cordial. And that usually is all it is, ceremonial, don't you think?
Right. I think this was ceremonial, but they reportedly that President Trump gave the Pope a copy of Martin Luther King's writings. Yes. And it's my hope that the Pope gave the president a copy of the Beatitudes. And
I know he gave him some encyclicals, and I'm not sure what else.
Oh, I think the encyclical was on the environment, I believe.
Oh, that would be great. Did he do that? Yeah. But I think that regardless, I think the Pope has been, as you've just pointed out, Mike, and will, I think, continue to be an important voice, speaking out gently in opposition. Gently but powerfully in opposition to some of the, many of Trump's proposals. And we can only hope that, for instance, on climate, on the Paris Agreement, where he hasn't publicly made a decision, we can only hope that the Pope, who is very strongly focused on that, may have provided some influence. We don't know, but we can hope.
And Teresa, how about on the poor?
Well,
take a look at the budget, which we're going to go to.
Well, exactly.
I mean, and here is, you know, basically the back of the hand to everybody in this country who is without.
I thought it was quite interesting that, you know, that just before his visit to the Vatican, they released the budget that they did, which is really nothing more than a complete assault on the poor. And that's hence my Beatitudes comment.
President Trump's $4.1 trillion budget is drawing rebukes even from some Republican allies for its politically unrealistic cuts to the social safety net and a broad swath of other domestic programs. The Senate's number two Republican, John Cornyn of Texas, says it's basically dead on arrival. The proposal reflects a conservative vision of smaller government, a drastic rollback of programs for the poor and disabled, and robust hikes for the military and border security. Top officials in President Trump's cabinet are heading to Capitol Hill to defend his plans to cut domestic programs and parry domestic criticism of the plans. Budget Director Mike Mulvaney appears today before the House budget panel, while Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin will testify at the Tax Writing House Ways and Means Committee. The plan, which is Trump's first as president, obviously, combines $4.1 trillion for the upcoming 2018 fiscal year with a promise to bring the budget back into balance in 10 years, relying on aggressive spending cuts and a surge in economic growth.
So who do they think they're fooling? Here's the way it works. Here's the way it always works. Teresa, you know about this because you've been watching this for years. Mike, you certainly know about it. It'll be a draconian proposal. The Republicans will say DOA, but there will be cuts as a result of this. It's just a matter of how many cuts. And they have to worry because they've got Republican governors like our excellent Republican governor in Massachusetts, where I live, a very good state. And you better believe that when you take an axe to Medicare, for example, or in this state, in New York, you take an axe to Medicare, you have really destroyed the budgets of those places. And the first thing those guys are going to do is go to their Republican counterparts in the Senate and say, hey, save us. Save us.
Go ahead, say it. The fund drives.
From the Cossacks at the door.
No. Yeah. Well, it raises a question, though. Is this just part of the art of the deal? They come out with this draconian budget, and then they'll get some of the cuts that they're asking for, and they'll be very hurtful, but the Republicans will have some cover, and they'll say that they fought back on it. It's interesting that New York's congressional delegation, especially the two Republicans who represent the greater capital region, Elise Stefanik and John Faso, at least Congresswoman Stefanik's office is saying that she's against some of the proposals that are in the budget, and she will fight to protect funding for programs that service the North Country of New York. There's a lot that she's identified that are targeted by the Trump budget. things like Medicaid, food stamps, et cetera, really serve her region, and she'll and that's a departure because she did vote for the American Health Care Act. And got a lot of criticism for it. So now she's able to at least pull herself away. Although John Faso of Kinderhook, who represents a large swath of your listening area in the Capital Region too, he's not so critical of this budget. He's still sticking with the president. And now the Democrats are lining up candidates to run against him in 2018. And it'll be interesting.
Which they would have done anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
they would have, but I think he's given some real cause in terms of activating a base, which independent Democratic base, which may have stayed home in the last election. I think he's put himself at real risk.
Teresa.
Well, I think I was interested in Congresswoman Stefanik's statement because it was pretty strong. And this Trump budget is devastating for the working poor, but particularly for those in rural America. But I think her constituents, it was interesting that she referenced the Medicaid cuts, yet she voted, you know, when the rubber hits the road, when it came time to vote, she voted for that health care bill. Now, interestingly, this afternoon, the CBO score, which is the analysis of
Congressional Budget Office
scoring, comes out today. Usually they score a bill saying how much it will cost and what impact it will have, and then they voted on it. In the case of the
ACA,
what I call the Trump care bill, but the ACA, they did the reverse, and so we'll know today what the impact of that is. But it was interesting to me that she did speak out against the budget, maybe a little bit easier to do since many of the leaders in the Republican House and Senate were speaking against it. But Congressman Faso, who's on the budget committee, his statement was vague to the point of being...
He's not departing yet from
Trump. Still giving Trump budget a hug, which I thought, you know, he begins by saying that make some notable and welcome recommendations, such as balancing the budget in 10 years and boosting our national defense readiness.
So what's everybody, what do you think everybody is up to? I mean, let's just look at the way in which this plays out. You got a whole bunch of people who voted for Trump, right? According to the polling, no matter what you may say, Teresa, about their self-interest, they're sticking with him.
But there's a difference.
Go figure that out.
I'm a broken record on this, but there's a difference between what he says and what the policies are. And when those people at those rallies who will be hurt deeply by these cuts, when they come to understand what the policy, what he says he's going to do, he said, I'm not going to cut Medicare, I'm not going to cut Medicaid, I'm on your side, I'm for the veterans, and what's in this budget are diametrically opposed. And when those folks realize that, I don't know that they're going to be supportive of him. And you saw that the Republicans in the House and Senate, when they did have a chance to vote on this in the continuing resolution, they did not vote for the draconian cuts. But the other thing that's happening is that, you know, at the federal level, the freeze is still in place. And so, for instance, at the Center for Disease Control, you're down 700 plus positions at a time when, you know, there's an Ebola outbreak and other things. I mean, there are things going on now that are already a problem.
Now, you are a wonk, of course.
I am.
And you are saying what you hope will happen. But up to now, and I think this what you just said falls into the well-known category of FYLTGE. You know what
okay,
that is?
Okay, explain that.
From your lips to God's ear. Nevertheless, there hasn't been that kind of emphasis. And the people who've gone out looking for the Trumpistas in the hinterlands have come back reporting on TV and every other place that people haven't changed.
They're proposing to cut NOAA satellites. Now, people don't even get that. The people like their weather, right? they turn on the TV, they get their weather from the television station, they get their weather from the Weather Channel. What most people don't understand, and it's not because they're stupid, it's because it's complicated, that the weather station gets that information from something called NOAA and from these satellites. And that's how we predict storms, so on. So people don't associate the federal government and their safety and weather.
I don't think the NOAA thing is going to have great traction coming 2018 elections.
No, but I'm saying that there are all these things that people don't think about. But I do think that if you have deep cuts in Medicaid, which cuts nursing home funding dramatically, it cuts health care for children.
But
they're proposing 20% cuts in child health programs.
But, no, you're right. But it's interesting because so many middle-class families, I'm going to get myself into trouble here.
Here we go.
Have taken advantage of spending down their parents' money, even though they keep making it a longer and longer time, in order to qualify. Are you following me? Mm-hmm. In order to qualify for. So now we know historically that the poor do not vote in the same numbers that, for example, Republicans do. But when you start messing around with the middle class and saying you're going to have to pay for your father and mother in the nursing home, that's a whole other story.
All right, we need to take a quick break here. Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Ray Graff in for Joe. We're joined today by Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and Teresa Bourgeois, and we'll be right back. Oh, hello, everyone. The mic is on.
And the mic was on.
Mike.
And you know, the good news is nobody swore. So the last time this happened,
we were talking about General Mattis opposing these budget cuts.
So Mike Spain, who was speaking prematurely, actually is the associate editor of the Times Union, and a nice piece on this today in the TU.
Yeah, our guy in Washington, Dan Friedman, pulled together some of the cuts in the proposed Trump budget that would affect New York State. For example, Amtrak's Lakeshore Limited from Chicago that cuts across upstate New York and stops in Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse.
Which is already late.
Which is always late anyway. The subsidy that keeps that going is going away. There's other proposals to cut Amtrak funding. And there's, according to a press release from Senator Chuck Schumer, it would also devastate WAMC, the National Public Radio affiliate in Albany.
So isn't that extraordinary that Schumer would reach into his grab bag and take us out as an example of what would happen? I'm pretty flattered, aren't you?
Well, it would cut $420,000.
We know that
in federal funding that works its way to WAMC. So that's just an example of how it will hit some of our region, and it will have an impact.
But it is interesting that Schumer chose that one to emphasize how draconian the budget is. Aren't you sort of flattered?
Yeah, don't forget the lockbox.
In an era of, he understands the problem with fake news and disparaging the First Amendment. And,
could be.
Well, our email address is panel@wamc.org, and I know we have a bunch, so why don't we take it up to news time and read some of these letters?
Okay, all right, I better read slow.
Okay.
Okay, good morning.
Lee.
Mulvaney justified the federal budget proposal as one that finally represents the actual taxpayers. In other words, the top 50% of earners don't want to help those earning minimum wage or less. This administration does not want the affluent to assist the poor through government programs. And that's Ian, who sent it from his new Gmail account.
Oh, terrific. Congrats on the Gmail account, Ian.
Casey says, I agree there are more demands on intelligence agencies due to the ever-expanding Russia investigation, but we have 17 in capital letters, government intelligence gathering services. They need to work effectively on all issues. Is it really too much to ask that the intelligence agency walk and chew gum at the same time?
Well, I think when you have a president that's disparaging them, at a time when I just think that that's not a good thing.
So morale is low, so we need more?
No, I'm not saying you need more. I'm saying that the president needs to think about disparaging and creating chaos within the intelligence community and all aspects of the focus we have on this.
I wonder if
there is a budget cut issue. I mean, he's cutting food for peace. Anyway, I'm interrupting you.
No, I was interrupting you on the other
end. I think, there's a proposed cut of in the Food for Peace program. Mm-hmm. Now, why does that matter? Well, you have famines in Yemen, and you have Nigeria, other places that are hotbeds for ISIS fomenting. And how do they recruit people? They recruit people who are poor and discouraged about life, and so, you know, we are adding to the foment. You know, when we're not there supporting folks,
right? We're not there when we're as you were saying, General Mattis, who's the defense secretary, says he's opposed to some of the cuts in this budget because for every dollar that gets spent to support our diplomacy around the globe, and it's not a lot of the budget, he saves $10 or $100 in defense costs. When you have to go in afterwards and fix the problem that you could have averted altogether through diplomacy and through aid to programs like this, it makes total sense to fund the diplomacy, which is facing a huge cut.
Right.
I did want to know whether or not among the 17 in capital letters agencies were the committees of Congress that were doing that. Because the motivation of people to do this is obviously, if I'm a politician and I want my name up there, you know, all the rest of it, that's different. You don't want to share with others. That means we're talking about your reelection. Yeah. Are you following me over here?
To some extent, yeah.
Okay. To some extent?
Yeah.
Is that a shot?
No, not at all.
Okay.
He wasn't paying attention at all.
Just looking at the clock saying, come on, let's
okay,
get going.
Well, I'm not the one who keeps talking here. It's everybody else. It's unfortunate that our president doesn't read and therefore won't benefit from the Pope's gifts. And that's from Patty. All right. And then the Pope was a victim of his own good manners, allowing himself to be co-opted by Donald Trump, who used this visit to obtain a papal imprimatur. He had little choice, but it's very unfortunate.
Who set this meeting up? Was this an invite from the Pope?
They asked for it.
Who asked for it?
Or the
Trump people asked for it.
Yeah, and of course, but you know, he kept it to a half hour. He had to get off and say a mass, you know, and he did keep it tight. But you know, one of the aspects of this is all the stories that have been written about this and all the commentaries that have been on the radio and on the TV about it end up reiterating the differences between what the Vatican has says and what this Pope has said and the policies of President Trump. And so having the visit is almost incidental. It just
it brings all of those issues back up.
And we're reminded of the very different approaches they have to all the problems we face.
We get this all the time, and I'm sure you do at the Times Union too, Mike. Why are you letting John Faso on your air? And if he is on your air, why don't you beat the hell out of him? And that's your job. No, our job is to let everybody have their say, obviously. We're not here to do that. And so when you say it's unfortunate that, you know, that he met with the Pope and he got publicity that way, I'm not buying it. I mean,
I think it's important.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing because just as you say, Mike, it you know, created a discussion on these important issues and how they differ.
Not only did Mike say it, but I said it a half an hour ago.
All right.
I think he should. I think for his penance, he should. No tweeting. He's only allowed to retweet the Pope for a week. No tweeting.
Joel says, I must respectfully disagree on whether Ford did the right thing. While going through a trial would have been horrible for the country, he established the president is actually above the law. And that's from Joel. Okay. And then we heard from Bill, who is retired from the Navy. As you all know, appealing to a higher purpose, very effective at motivating individuals and groups. Trump's Saudi speech was surprisingly good, and one which seems Trump stayed on script. The strong part is that he called the terrorism crisis as a battle between good and evil, not between religions. Very true and very strategic. Did McMaster write that speech? Similarly, the elites of terrorism movement appeal to higher purpose that pervasively conflates intolerance and mayhem with virtue. To succeed at the struggle, the world needs rhetoric aimed at those terror elites and their misguided evil minions. And my question, says Holly, was Manchester a dry run? Will the next stadium event involve a bomber at every exit to the stadium, with another bomber inside to detonate as people rush back in? Yikes, I'm scaring myself.
Did you see in the paper, I don't know if the TU had it, I saw it somewhere online, that there was a false alarm in the Atlanta Braves game the other night?
Oh, I didn't see that.
And it came up on the screen saying emergency, and then horns blared, and they said, oh, no. our mistake. There was no emergency.
Or a little mistake.
But everybody's on edge.
Yeah, and somebody may get trampled. We have seen that before as a result. Okay, and Danny says, this conversation reminds me of a Benjamin Franklin quote. I'll have to paraphrase. Anyone who would sacrifice liberty for safety deserves neither liberty or safety. And Julia says, Trump's Muslim ban wouldn't have done anything to prevent the latest terrorist attack. Abadi was born in the UK 22 years ago. He was a homegrown, radicalized British citizen. Well, you know, when Julius, my good friend, I got to tell you, that's a tough one because, you know, it is the children of some of these folks who are doing it. But Trump would argue, good, don't let him in at all. Right? Well, I mean, that's what Trump would argue. Not me, but he. Hello, panelists.
We need
Ellen,
a different
your
approach.
Comment about Britain being a non-gun society is incorrect. I watch YouTube videos of shooting and hunting often. Please open yourself up to the law-abiding citizens' use of firearms in a responsible way. Thank you, Dixon. He writes frequently.
Did we talk about that?
Well,
what he's saying
is the police are not armed.
He's saying
I think
the Brits.
Oh, I think they are.
They
many
hunt
of them
the
are.
Hound. They go with the hounds and they hunt. You know, and that's.
But you
guns.
Weren't saying the people weren't armed. You were saying that the
was. He knows that.
Police
okay,
were.
So
armed.
We will take a break now. You want one more letter, and then we have to take a break for news.
Okay. Brian said, for the second time in 2 days, Mr. Shartok has either obliquely or today implicitly endorsed guilt by association in reference to the Manchester bombing. It wasn't okay when we did it after 9/11 or when the New York Police Department does it by surveillance of mosque, and it flummoxes me that Mr. Shartok thinks the UK should do it now. Time for him, me, to go.
Oh, that's not nice, but good use of the word flummox, and we'll award 1 point and then a million.
Rhymes with stomachs.
Let's take a break here. It is the roundtable at WAMC. The email is panel@wamc.org. We'll break for news, and then we'll talk about former CIA Director John Brennan. It's the roundtable on WAMC. The panel, you know, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 6 minutes after 10 o'clock on a Wednesday. The panel is Alan Shartok from WAMC, Mike Spain from the Times Union, and Teresa Bourgeois from Communications Consultant. Do you have a name?
Sprint's Consulting.
Oh, there you go. You see, I didn't.
It means hope for. You can't have bourgeois consulting for obvious reasons. So Sprint's means hope for the future. So
very good, very good.
Ray, I heard from a friend who called me up short because our guest on the Vox Pop yesterday, distinguished professor, announced that there had been no acts of terrorism in Germany.
Where there have been a massive numbers of refugees and immigrants.
Yes, and it turns out, of course, that there have been. And, you know,
the truck running over people in Berlin, and there was a couple of stabbings in the last year, and several more that had been thwarted. So
yeah, always want to correct the record here.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Former CIA Director John Brennan says he can't say whether there was collusion during the U.S. presidential election between Russia and Donald Trump's campaign, but he knew there was reason to have investigators, quote, pull those threads. Brennan was President Obama's CIA director. He told Congress yesterday he personally warned Russia last summer against interfering in the election and was so concerned about Russian contacts with people involved in the Trump campaign that he convened top counterintelligence officials to focus on them. Meanwhile, a Senate committee has issued two additional subpoenas to businesses of ousted Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, one of several key figures in the Russia-Trump campaign probe. They've sent a letter to his lawyer questioning his basis for claiming a Fifth Amendment right not to provide documents. The letter also narrows the scope of the documents the panel is seeking. Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr says the panel may consider a contempt of Congress charge if there is no response from Flynn. Who wants first?
Well, listen, let me just start by saying the issue here is, does the Fifth Amendment protection guaranteed by the United States Constitution go to his papers and his corporate papers? And corporations, at least according to this interpretation, we have heard the opposite in other places. Corporations are not people, therefore they are not protected by the Fifth Amendment right. If you are able to subpoena them and he doesn't comply, that puts you at risk of a citation for contempt of Congress. And if that happens, you know, you're facing jail. My own fear here is that Flynn is going to become the sacrificial lamb that takes over for all of the wrongdoings of all the other people who talk to Russians and others, including perhaps the president.
Pause. Anybody else?
Well, that remains to be seen.
Whether
Flynn will end up being the guy that spills all the beans, and whether he'll testify, and he is seeking immunity. And so far, Congress has been reluctant to give him that. They're looking back to the 1980s when Oliver North was granted immunity, and then he went on trial for a variety of charges, but the conviction was thrown out because he was protected by the immunity that Congress granted him, and therefore he couldn't be held accountable for the crimes that he did get convicted of, and then that was thrown out. So people are hesitant to give Flynn this kind of immunity, but don't you think we'll hear at one point? I mean, I agree about the documents. I don't think the documents would be covered. I've never heard of the documents covered by the Fifth Amendment.
Especially when they belong to a corporation and they're not personal documents belonging to you.
Yeah.
And because those are the places that he was doing business, for example, in Turkey and these other places. So that makes it a little bit different.
Right. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know those legal issues, but my guess is that his legal team is more focused on the Mueller investigation than on the House and Senate investigation, because that's where the Mueller, they can bring charges. But I know the Brennan issue is a separate one, but it's all intertwined.
Now, playing devil's advocate here, former CIA Director John Brennan said he can't say whether there was collusion during the U.S. presidential
election.
He did
say that.
But he knew there was reason to have investigators pull those threads. My question is, he had the investigators pull those threads while he was CIA director.
Right.
And nothing came of it then. What inference can we draw of that?
And how do we know nothing came of it then?
In other words, there were no charges.
I listened to that hearing, though. He was very clear, and they kept pressing him on that. But the CIA is different than the FBI. And so the CIA handed over the information to the FBI because the FBI investigates internally within the U.S. and the CIA is investigating externally. They're not supposed to investigate externally. And so he repeatedly, when the Republicans kept forcing that issue to try to say, well, you know, if you didn't know by then it didn't happen. He repeatedly reiterated that the Bureau would have that information, not necessarily him, because he was deeply disturbed by the interactions that he saw between the Trump campaign officials and foreign individuals.
And he went to them. He went to the Russians.
And he went to the FBI.
And to the Russians.
And he went to the Russians. And what he seemed most disturbed about is when he went to the Russians, he warned the Russians that America would not be happy about
right.
what happened. And he now Brennan is, I think it's fair to say, he seems stunned.
That America is not so upset.
That the President of the United States and a whole group of people are not. And here, Elise Stefanik, Congresswoman Stefanik, she's on the House Intelligence Committee that held this hearing yesterday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I listened to her line of questioning. And her line of questioning didn't seem out of concern about the Russians interfering with the election.
Mm.
It was about the propriety and the credibility of the intelligence assessment that was done at the request of President Obama at the end of his term. She was being critical of that as opposed to focusing on did the Russians interfere with our election. It was stunning.
Right. Well, to me, the most striking contradiction is that Brennan warned the Russians, or the Russian intelligence agency, it's kind of like their CIA, that there would be ramifications. And it turns out that as this is exposed, and pretty much the FBI, the CIA, Senate intelligence people, anybody who has access to the information has confirmed that, yes, the Russians did attempt to interfere with the election, and they were hacking campaign accounts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whether that changed the outcome of the election, nobody really knows. But President Trump has been successful and effective in telling his supporters, this base of his that stays loyal to him, that this is a fake news story and there's nothing to it. And so far, They're buying it.
But it's not a fake news story. And what struck me, and Alan, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, that clearly Brennan said, as others have in the intelligence community have said, that they knew this was going on, and they briefed the Gang of Eight, the so-called Gang of Eight, the top leadership.
In the Congress.
In the Congress. Yeah. And that includes Paul Ryan and others. And so these people were briefed on this interference, yet they stuck with Trump.
I wonder why. I mean, after all, they weren't helping Hillary. They were helping the Republican candidate. And, of course, that's why. I mean, that's...
But even during the primaries, this was...
Well...
I don't know. It just...
Good point.
I don't know.
I think that the Republicans were so anxious to control both houses of Congress and the White House that they overlook a lot of things. I mean, to me, it seems like the Republican leaders look at the Trump presidency as a vehicle to get their agenda through. Okay. And until that changes, they're going to stay in support of him.
And one of the main things Speaker Ryan wants is he wants to dismantle Medicaid. He's been saying it for a decade. He wants to turn it from an entitlement into a block grant and cut it deeply. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like SNAP, the food stamp program. He doesn't like entitlement
programs. I mean, this
and
is
they
very,
want this tax break.
It's philosophical. I mean, he's a disciple of Ayn Rand, you know, believing that your success in life is based on your own effort, and you should be, you know, if you don't succeed, it's your fault.
But there was a moment in that hearing where Brennan was asked for a congressman from, I think he was from Washington State, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but what should I tell my constituents, you know, about why this matters, because so many people don't understand why this matters. And Brennan's had a short but really powerful statement about how important it is when we choose our elected leaders, that it's an inalienable right that we should protect. It was a really magnificent brief statement, powerful.
Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Teresa Bourgeois, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok on the panel, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and we have letters.
Has anything of substance come from Trump's trip, or has it only given a chance to, quote, appear presidential? That's Chuck in South Hadley. Brian says, I understand the president's budget is not well proportioned, and please don't mistake me for defending it on our current CIC, Commander-in-Chief. Do not do that, folks, because I'm, you know, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, rule three is do not use abbreviations. Yeah, and quickly proof your emails.
CIC, yeah.
Unless it's from your lips to God's ears. F-Y-L.
That wasn't an email. I just wrote that down.
That was a little joke, see? I would like to point out, however, that severe cuts are necessary, and there is always a disconnect between what voters want and how to achieve it. I'm always baffled by people who want to see everything under the sun funded and taken care of by our state and federal governments, yet not willing to pay the enormous taxes required to make it happen. That's why, you know, you get people walking with two buckets on their shoulders. Politicians like Andrew Cuomo, you know, puts 2.5%. You can't go over that. But on the other hand, is now an outstanding liberal calling for, you know, more resources. I can't even keep up with how many trillions of dollars we're in debt. This system is broken. Fixing it requires pain, plain and simple. Well, does that, Brian, does that include, for example, screwing the poor and giving the defense people more money, a lot more money? Does it?
Right. I mean, this is a choices. You know, you have $1.6 billion added to the budget to build a wall that makes no sense. And you have $1.7 billion to eliminate the Food for Peace program. So that's a choice.
Yeah, it is a time of choices. And you know, it's not a new debate over whether we should be investing in guns or investing in people and programs to combat poverty, et cetera. It's gone on for decades and centuries, I guess. It's gone on even before the United States existed. So,
many of them are to fund a tax break that is targeted primarily to the top 1%. So, I don't think that that's what the election was about in the last election. I think, you know, Trump claimed that he heard the voices of those who were angry and upset and felt left out. Well, it wasn't the top 1% who felt left out. And this budget attacks those people who did feel left out and disenchanted with the government.
Mary says, Teresa touched on the discrepancy between Elise Stefanik's rhetoric and her votes. If you review Stefanik, Connick's voting record, you will see that she consistently gives lip service and expresses, quote, concern over GOP policies, then votes with the GOP and her mentor, Paul Ryan, and that's from Mary in Clifton Park. All right.
All right.
Okay, and then R writes, okay, good morning to our leaders. Please stop deploring terrorist acts and calling them names. It confirms their image of themselves. Instead, ask, what is the purpose of this? If you in any way support this, explain why killing teenagers is good for you and your ideology, ISIS. Have the courage to put your vision of right and wrong on the world stage and defend it. Says R from Manchester.
Well, they.
Oh no, who from? I don't know where he's from. Okay.
Well, they would think it's. They would say it's in retribution for the bombings in Mosul
and
Raqqa and all those places where they say, well, children were killed in those. I'm not defending that. I'm just saying that's their argument. Well, the U.S. and others bombed in Raqqa and Mosul and Yemen and killed women and children as well. Yeah. That's their argument.
Dear panel, isn't part of the problem that many of these budget cuts won't be felt until later, perhaps after Trump is gone? Then people will blame whomever is in power. John from Slinglands, where everybody's a David. Good morning, panel. Most voters do not pay close attention to goings-on discussed daily on this panel. Trump's core base will not be changing views. Saw news articles from Nixon's time saying his base still supported him a week before he resigned. Revisiting this group, as media keeps doing, is unproductive. And Jeff says, unfortunately, Teresa Spelling, who is pontificating about how Noah does not know anything that she is speaking about. I've been in the industry for 40 years with co-founder of the Commercial Weather Service Association. NOAA does not provide the weather for TV broadcasts, TV and forecasts. Most every media outlet uses private weather companies to provide their weather information, forecasts, and graphics. I would be surprised if the TV meteorologists who do the weather for WMC don't use a private weather provider to access their data. About 20% of the NOAA budget goes to this into data. Well, 80% goes to people, meteorologists, who create partly cloudy forecasts that nobody uses.
Is the weather data gathered by privately owned and privately launched satellites,
answer,
or are they
no.
just taking government data and then interpreting it and then distributing it? That's my
And as I understand it, is really, and Jason Goff and I have talked about this before, but it's really the number-crunching power of the computers that is the thing.
Right, but the data has to be made available
from
to everybody because it's government data from the satellites the U.S. government puts up.
As well.
So that's what's at stake here.
And so, for example, the National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, they do basic research like crazy. And you know who comes along and grabs that stuff? The drug companies do.
Sure.
So, in fact, that work is being done for them.
Right. Well, this is Sandy. When the Hurricane Sandy happened, the European models were more correct earlier than the U.S. models, the NOAA models, and that's because they had online higher performance computers. We had the computing capacity, but it wasn't matched with our satellites, and they did. And now that has been improved under the Obama administration. But the underlying data, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that the underlying data comes from the government satellites, but also who flies through the hurricanes to collect the data.
Sure.
Military folks do.
Khan says, try this on for size. Couple all the cuts to the social safety net with the federal law mandating a living, in bold, minimum wage. Khan from Sheffield.
Khan.
The wrath of Khan. Okay. Lisa says, Trumpsters will still support Trump even if his cuts hurt them. They won't believe that Trump did it to them. Rather, they will believe on the other that they despise had brought them to this point, and Trump had no choice. Lisa in Montgomery.
All right, one more.
Only one?
Well, we're running out of time here, Daddy.
Okay. Hi, panel. Yes, the budget cuts will adversely affect many people who voted for Trump. See what he did there?
Yeah.
But I'm worried that Trump will soon spin the fallout of these budget cuts as being a failure of Obama policies, just what we heard for the last letter. And then finally...
Oh, boy. One more?
One more.
All right, that's all you get.
Okay, that's it. That's all I have. Am I right, says Mary, and remember that many farmers benefit from selling overstocks of grain and other food for peace? This becomes then an economic issue. P.S. Good job, guys. And that's from Mary.
Okay, well, we thank you for those letters, and you don't have to write them again until we start the show tomorrow morning. Thanks to Mike Spain. Thanks to Teresa Bourgeois. Thanks to Alan Shartok. The lockbox is at WAMC.org.
How much is in there?
$270,000, and we have a long way to go.
Fantastic.
All right, thanks again, and we'll be back with more Roundtable in a moment.